Welcome, we're back to Mini PC Show, episode 55. My name is Brian, and we're joined with the usual suspects, Door to Door Geeks, and Rich. Guys, how are you today? The Flying Rich.
I'm good, and I'm actually pseudo-flying. I hopped a friend's plane, rode in the back seat to Oshkosh, which if you're an airplane fan, Oshkosh is the air show you go to each year. So I'm pretty excited.
So is it for enthusiasts, pilots, hobbyists, or everybody, or like even like the corporate guys?
Yeah, it's everybody. You do get a mix of, and not to throw people under the bus or anything like that, but you get the looky-loos for the air show. You know, the people that want to see an airplane, never been up close. And the world's best air show performers are here.
Nice.
I hate to say this, but as like an airplane guy, for me, one, it's catching up on my canard buddies that I haven't seen in a while. And the real airplane people don't look up. You know, it's like there could be the best air show performance of the world going on over your head, and you just don't look up because you're looking to see somebody, you know, an old friend or something like that at the air show, or you're checking out some new equipment, that kind of thing. And I will give a plug to Mark Spencer. I'm working one booth, the Droid EFB booth, which is ADS-B flight software for charting. And he has another product, which is the XFS, the Extensible Flight System. And oh my gosh, it's amazing. So if anybody is an aviation person that listens to this podcast, and it is based on a single board computer that drives the XFS. So that's
do you know what kind?
Show. Oh gosh. Yeah, it's a kind I haven't heard about before. It is an ARM-based processor. And I would have to check. I'd have to get back to you so you can put it in the notes.
Okay. What was that called again, that board, that system?
It's the XFS from Avolution. That's Extensible Flight System.
Gotcha. Very cool. So do you have any new hardware, guys?
Unfortunately, I do not. I'm just, I'm really kind of tweaked about this flight stuff. I'm kind of a geek when it comes to planes, but I really don't know much about it. I mean, I love flying. I love going to air shows. But I just haven't really jumped off the deep end to learn as much as I can about it.
Oh, yeah. And I kind of sidetracked quick, but the air show, you get corporate jet sellers and vendors and people that fly and own corporate jets. You get people that fly powered parachutes that are there. So, like, absolutely anybody that has any interest in aviation does have a reason to go to Oshkosh.
That's awesome.
Well, did you see the flying thing at Comic-Con?
No, I did not.
The Mythbuster guy that's not a jerk, I can't remember his
Adam
name.
Savage?
Was there, and the guy who had basically the human wearable jet engine suit with one jet engine on the back now, two arm jets, where he can basically
like Iron Man.
Levitate. Iron Man-ish, absolutely. He was there and he did another test and then he talked to him for like 5 minutes and then he was basically exclaiming how we are constantly revving. We have six different development streams always running in parallel, so we always have teams doing their own thing. Big changes are coming very soon, kind of thing. And I was gonna say, man, that's the kind of stuff that just, so my son said, so wait a minute, you're telling me by the time I'm your age, I might be able to fly around in my personal suit?
Yeah. Rocket Man!
Well, think about it. Back in the 60s, you could fly, you know, basically strap a rocket on your back. It's a chemical rocket system. I forget if it was peroxide and a silver catalyst, but it was only 20 seconds. You only get a 20-second flight.
Right.
Right, yeah. He said with the current tanks, he can get about 5 minutes of steady flight. But he said, I would never fly it for the 5 minutes because I don't want to run out.
Yeah, that's the fear.
Well, and the microturbines are, and first off, gas turbine engines are notoriously fuel hungry. And the gas turbine engines, the microturbines, are incredibly gas hungry, more so than a full-scale engine. and it's because of the RPMs that they turn, the shaft diameter, that your flame holder chamber within the jet engine can't be long enough so you get complete combustion. It has to be shorter so the forces on the shaft aren't too high and tear it apart.
Wow.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I did say to my son, well, yes, it's possible. I said, but it's also possible teleportation. And I said, there's also a possibility that you're going to have to drive a car around.
Yeah, I think I'd rather stick to a jet engine on my back than to teleport my molecules across the known universe or space.
I don't know. It's just one of those things in the future. I said, we really don't know. We, you know, could be anything, could be a combination thereof, might be none of them. Don't know. I have a little mini PC news, not new hardware related, but DietPi, one of the distros I and Rich are really big fans of here, came out with version 1.5.4. Two stories. One, was running a Raspberry Pi 2 here, running DietPi 1.16 on it, and it's my Mattermost messaging bot. And I did a upgrade inside of DietPi, and it went from 1.16. It looked like it went through every single version: 1.16, 1.17, 1.18, all the way up to 1.54. I rebooted everything. Everything still seems like it's working fine. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's really impressive to go that many cycles and not completely break itself. The bad news is I did get DietPi 1.5.4 running on my Raspberry Pi connected to my 3D printer. I installed Octoprint. I cannot get the camera to work no matter what I do, no matter what I try. I'm going to try to bang on a little bit more, but the one thing I really liked about DietPi Octoprint was in their custom configuration interface, I can dynamically turn off the onboard Wi-Fi. I can tell you guys, between us, I am becoming an extreme non-fan of the Raspberry Pi onboard Wi-Fi for speed and performance. Maybe there's some kind of antenna you can put on it or something, but I am getting unbelievably poor performance out of it and distance out of it. I mean, my router is right here next to me, and the Raspberry Pi is less than 15 feet behind me in a garage that's not steel-walled, concrete-walled, or anything. It's just wood, 2x4s, and drywall.
And what's the distance?
Like 18 feet.
Wow. Yeah,
that's and with the onboard, and with the onboard Wi-Fi, without any other thing connected, one out of every 4 or 5 reboots, it would connect to the access point, and it would only stay connected for, at the most, like 15, 20 minutes.
And this is a handful of Pis that you have, or just one particular Pi that's doing this?
The Raspberry Pi 3, I only have one of them.
Okay.
And so the odd thing is when... Sorry?
Yeah, I. What do you consider install? You said install.
Octoprint has a SD card image for the Raspberry Pi 3. You just flash it to the card, and that's how it's supposed to work.
Well, in DietPi, it's just a checkbox, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, when I loaded up DietPi, I can dynamically disable the onboard Wi-Fi. I did try the onboard Wi-Fi after installing DietPi, and I got the same exact thing.
No, I meant to install Octoprint with DietPi.
Oh, it was just go through the interface, scroll down to their new printing section where there's a cloud print service and then Octoprint. I just click the box, go back one menu, go down to install, and wait.
Yeah, and I'm not saying this to make fun of you. I'm saying this for if anybody hasn't used DietPi before, it's absolutely that simple. Like, you want Nextcloud to run, boom, check Nextcloud.
Yeah, I have heard people having issues with the first time boot. My first time boot is always the same thing. I let it boot, I connect a monitor to it, I log in, and as soon as I do, it does a download if it can find a connection to the internet, and it does a expansion of the file system and does a in-place upgrade right away. And what I think is people look at that and they see their device booting and think, well, there's something wrong.
It might be just that I'm used to it, that DietPi does that, but most of my Pi devices, if I'm using DietPi, I never hook a monitor to.
Right, just use them in headless mode.
Right, just and SSH I will... Right. And I will say the only thing I don't like about Diet Pie, and correct me if I'm wrong, Rich, it does not actively force you to make a new password.
Huh. I think
did
you're
it?
Right.
Doesn't.
I don't think it did. I think I had to go in and run a change password command to do it.
Right.
It's
right,
best to do it that way.
Security menu.
Right.
I mean,
you know, my logic is if you're getting one of these devices and you're installing something for the first time, you should at least have, and I hate saying it like this, I really do, but you really should have a basic idea of what good security is. If you're 8 or 10 years old, hopefully the video or online webpage telling you how to do this also tells you to change password.
I was playing around with Raspbian a few days ago, and that didn't force me to change a password at all.
Now, another, this is not exactly mini PC, but turnkey Linux, when it boots, it forces you to change the password. And I just think that's smart. Because then you don't have to, one, you don't have a root default root password. So if everybody knows I'm running a particular distro of turnkey Linux, you know, say it's turnkey Linux Lamp Stack, they're not going to know my root and root username and password by just checking, because it forces you the first boot to do that.
Yeah, I'm a fan of turnkey Linux. It's like the Diet Pie of VMs, where you can go on their website, browse a whole bunch of choices from WordPress to a Drupal stack to a SQL server to an email server or whatever. Not SQL, I mean MySQL server. Just download and then just download it, boot it up into a VM, and voila, it's up and running.
Love it.
Yeah, so hopefully it's just my Raspberry Pi 3, which I did get when it first came out, which means right now it's technically kind of old. I'm hoping that's what's going on. It's just either one that fell through the cracks in quality, or it's just old and I beat it up a lot. It's been moved around a lot, jostled around a lot. It went to conferences with me and everything. So hopefully it's just that. Right now I'm not going to buy another Raspberry Pi 3 no matter what, because I know they're going to rev it here sooner or later. It has to be sooner rather than later. So I'm just going to hold out, wait till the next one.
Hey, remember, Dora, I was having some issues with the Wi-Fi when I installed OwnCloud on my Xero. Do you remember that? And I think there was some issues with the software.
Yeah. I will say, I honestly, Raspbian's great. I don't want to speak bad about Raspbian, but there are certain things that just don't work and don't work right. Like for years, literally years, you could not go into the network interfaces config and hard set a IP address, or else it just wouldn't work. You would have to instead go onto your router and set a reserved address that way.
Oh, no, this is on Diet Pie.
Oh.
Yeah, this is when I chose the Diet Pie distro, and I was trying to install OwnCloud, the USB network interface would work just fine, but my wireless interface was missing. And it came up without me doing anything when I installed Raspbian. So I kind of left it with Raspbian.
Yeah, I'll say Diet Pie is good. Diet Pie isn't perfect. Diet Pie is based off of Armbian. So there are certain core things that they have to wait for it to come upstream for them to make their changes to place. And this is not supposed to be an excuse. This is just the way that it is. So it might be one of those things where if you try it again, it will work fine. I honestly do have a Raspberry Pi Zero literally sitting right next to me that I was planning on installing stuff to and seeing how it works. I got my Kickstarter, like $10 milled aluminum chain Raspberry Pi Zero case. It is metal. It's absolutely metal. But when I look at it, it almost looks like plastic, and it feels so light because it's aluminum, I'm guessing. I swore for a while, this isn't metal. This is plastic.
Yeah, it looks pretty nice. I like that.
Yeah, and then, of course, the question is, after installing it, what do I do with it? It's a keychain, so it's meant to be portable, so I don't know.
Wireshark. I'm always hip to it with Wireshark. You never know when you're going to need it.
Well, you're a network guy by trade. I'm not a network guy, and I really like having my job.
That's true.
Now, there's a piece of software I wanted to make sure that we didn't skip this week. Line 494. A lot of people complain that one of their number one biggest gripes about mini computers is creating the SD card image. What tool do I use? What settings do I use? What, you know, kind of questions. I will say from past experiences, using stuff like, oh man, there was a tool I could use that would mount an ISO file on my Android device. I would plug it up to a computer and it could see it as a CD and boot to it. I can't remember what it's called, like Drive Droid or Droid Drive. Hmm. And I had very mixed results with that. It turns out it depends on the operating system on the device, the hardware on the device, and how it presents itself to the computer. So it wouldn't shock me if this is not also a perfect implementation and you would have different results on your hardware. But I honestly think it's worth a try. But the hooker is your phone has to have a micro SD card slot in it. So if you do have one, you can download this app for Android called Pi SD Card Imager by Mike Redrobe. Completely free. No in-app purchases, no ads, nothing like that. You just download the image, stick your card in, click a couple buttons, bang, 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 boom, bang, bam. You got yourself an SD card ready to boot. I do have a phone upstairs with an SD card in. I have not had a chance to check it out yet. See, this says recommended to use an OTG cable and a micro SD card reader. Well, I got that. Not right here, but I do have one of them too. So I might give that a try instead.
Yeah, I picked one up a couple of days ago for like $4. I think it was had micro USB on one side and standard USB on the other side with different slots on the side of it. You can fit a full-size, micro SD.
SD card?
Yeah, oh. SD card or a micro SD card. It's pretty good. I use it for my my camera and flashing cards for my Pi, so it works out pretty good.
Yeah, I'm hooked on those little tools you can get for your phone. It just makes it much more useful and functional.
Hmm.
Very cool. So if I get a chance to try this week, I will report back on my success or failure. I have two phones I can try it on immediately. One is an Asus Zenfone 2 upstairs and then my Huawei Honor 8. I can try it on both of them, see what happens. But I mean, Etcher is a good tool. And again, I'm not a fan whatsoever of Flash. In fact, they just announced officially today, it is official, Flash will be killed and stop production. I want to say late 2020. It can't happen to a nicer piece of software. But when it does happen, you know, tools like Etcher, I don't know what they're going to do because they rely on Flash, I believe, still. You know, I don't like Flash. I don't want to install Flash on any of my computers. So I'm not a big fan of it.
The Pinebook Etcher tool, I've had zero success with. And it's kind of nice interface because you can select what OS you want to download and install, and it downloads it automatically for you and then burns it to your micro SD. But I have not been able to get one of those to boot.
Did it act like it was working? Or?
Yeah, it validated the whole shoot and match, and I plug it in and into the Pinebook, and I could not get it to boot. I did use Etcher. Not their, you know, the Pinebook flavored Etcher. And I was able to get a bootable micro SD out of it.
Oh.
And I think I tried this on both my Mac and an Ubuntu machine with the same result.
The dumb question is, did you prepare the SD card in any way?
No.
Okay, because a lot of the time when I use GUI based tools in any shape or form, I first have to open up a tool like either FDisk, G parted or something like that, and actually create a new partition table,
mm-hmm.
or else my burns into a format.
No. Create partition table, which is basically completely rewriting the MBR. So you do that one action, and it basically nukes the entire disk.
Yeah, I didn't try that. And thanks for bringing that up, because that could be a good solution.
Well, but my real thing is, you shouldn't have to do that. If this is supposed to be, if any GUI tool is supposed to be an all-in-one solution, it's the kind of thing that it should perform very first as soon as it starts to access that card. But most GUI tools I found do not do that, and I'm not sure why.
Isn't that tool that I was talking about? So it's got standard USB on one side. It's got micro SD on the other. So you can actually plug that directly into your phone and flash micro SD cards and standard SD cards.
Very cool. Can't really cost that much, right?
No, it's like $3-4.
Very cool. Yeah, I've had one for a little while. Honestly, I have no idea how much it costs because it's been over a year, I'll say.
Yeah.
Very cool. Any one of the show links seem interesting to you guys? Because I'll say one that caught my eye, at least, $494. And I'll admit, I was very confused when I first read this. Intel Compute Stick is their USB form factor mini computer. It's kind of like the Chrome Stick, but it's an Intel stick where you basically can shove it into a monitor like a thumb drive, then plug in a keyboard or mouse into it or Bluetooth into it, and then you have a full functioning computer in a thumb drive. This is not that, but this is technically by Intel. The article is over on Little Putin says, Intel's Neural Compute Stick brings machine learning to any PC. Okay, well, long story short, a company called Movidius was bought by Intel. They were already in the process of making this device, and then Intel basically liked the idea so much, or it was so far along in being in the production stage that they decided to come out with it anyway. So what it is, instead of having an HDMI socket on it, has a USB socket on it. I'm going to assume USB 3, because if you're doing anything that requires heavy power, I believe you have to have USB 3.
Yeah.
Supposedly, this is using a VPU. Now, all of a sudden, they're making up all these new acronyms. Because there was CPU, then GPU, now there's TPU and what I've seen, VPU, which is a vision processing unit, which it is an Intel processor inside, supposedly uses under 1 watt of power and offers 100 gigaflops of performance.
What? 100
But gigaflops. It's heavily, I know, but it's heavily geared towards this machine learning algorithm interface to it. So it's not like you're going to plug this thing up and all of a sudden play any like extreme heavy duty game on it or something. This is designed just for machine learning kind of thing.
I hate to say it, I couldn't figure out what it does.
Well, think of it like you have a cluster of computers. The computer hands jobs out to each of the computers in that software stack. And then the jobs report back on their findings, on their results. Well, this one, supposedly, you can hook up either individually or in clusters or in nodes of clusters. You have machine learning type tasks that you want to get done. This is how a dog looks like, find all the dogs in the picture kind of task.
Yeah.
And it will take it off your computer so you could still use your computer while it's doing the individual processing on the stick itself. Now, it's easy for me to say, but I still don't understand what the hell it does. Or, like, how it does, or anything like that.
It sounds very intriguing, let me tell you that. Trying to apply a use case to it. So, perhaps, like you said, if I needed to do something outside of the Google universe, instead of using their machine learning, I can pretty much lean on my own.
And I keep thinking this really can't be for a use case in like full blown pro production again. I keep thinking this has to be, I'm thinking a developer centric interface. So then when they want to do their thing on the real rig, you know, back in the office, you know, they can write code that will functionally work alongside with it. I don't know.
This is pretty awesome. I got to share this with my my nephew. He's attending UMass. His major is computer learning.
Gotcha. Well, I'll tell you right now, from what I keep hearing from everybody, well, he's going to be guaranteed a job. I hope he understands what the hell he's doing, because from what I gather, there's not a whole lot of people that do.
No, not a whole lot. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. The only other thing that I will say in the notes that caught my eye, and it's only because it's you know, it's me, it's my addiction. I saw more than a couple people complain, is what I'm going to say, because, you know, this is almost seems like a fad now. Line 490 in the notes, banana pie. Banana pie is my old faithful. Banana pie is honestly, it's like my first girlfriend, if you will, kind of thing. It's the piece of hardware that I truly first fell in love with as a mini computer. I had many computers before this, but none of them were as functional, as useful, as powerful, as, you know, easy to use, as versatile as any than the Banana series of computers. So when I saw this, I like it. I get excited by it. Over on bananapie.org, they made a formal announcement, basically a Banana Pi BPI M20, hence the use of the word zero. It's a quad-core single-board computer with a all-winter H2 chip design. It is basically a Raspberry Pi form factor computer, but banana. It has a 1 gigahertz quad-core processor. So I believe the Raspberry Pi Zero chip is technically faster. It's governed down, I believe, to be a single core 1 gig processor. The Banana is not Realtek affiliated whatsoever, you know, so it's going to be a different chipset and stuff. This is a quad core 1 gigahertz ARM7 chip, 512 megs of RAM, same exact RAM from what I can tell that's on the Raspberry Pi Zero. And a lot of the other things look similar, is what I'm going to say, except once again, for the third time, once again, unlike anything Raspberry related, they actually have buttons on the damn thing, to which I got to say, I'm sorry, buttons are good. Buttons are not bad.
Actually, it's got Wi-Fi on, so it's comparable to the Zero W.
Yeah.
Didn't realize that. You're right, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth. So, well, I'll just say this. I would love for someone smarter than myself who understands how to use, what's it called? There's an IF command, IF something, where you basically flood a network to measure its bandwidth. I tried to get it working. I don't know how I'm doing. And I would love to see side-by-side speed comparisons over multiple distances with a Raspberry Pi Zero W and this one because of the Wi-Fi, just to see how it is. But, so this has a power on button and a reset button, unlike the Raspberry Pi Zero, which, to be honest, you know, more RAM would be better on all the Raspberry Pis, period. More processor would be better on all of them. Yeah. USB 3 would be better on all of them. Yeah. But buttons, guys, buttons. People like buttons. I like buttons. I don't want to have to. And every time I tell my son to turn one of these things off or on, he does the same thing that everybody seemingly of a certain age or of a certain understanding of computers does when I ask him to turn it off and turn it on. He goes up to it and he starts to unplug it, but he moves it sideways when he's pulling. And I'm like, what are you doing? Just pull it straight out. You don't go back and forth. What's wrong with you? Well, it isn't loose. It isn't supposed to be loose.
So funny.
So
we have a price on this?
That's the thing. Right now, I do not know any price that is available, nor do I know a date when this is going to be released. I will say this is the kind of thing I instantaneously went into my Google Alert stuffy stuff and put a Google Alert for this. So I'll know immediately when this thing is going to be up for sale by people, because this is one I'm going to absolutely positively get.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And between us friends, I'm really heavily thinking I'm probably going to jump and get that $89 AMD 4x4 computer. Brian, you were on the show last week. Do you hear us talking about that one?
No, I didn't.
Okay. It was, I want to say Sapphire, S-A-P-H-I-E-R 4x4. $89. Do my little Google foo. Minimum amount of words, maximum amount of results. And the first result is Ford Sierra. So obviously I spelled that wrong. My Google foo off. Oh, wait. That's right. I'm not using Google. I'm testing out Start Page. I've been using Start Page here for like the last week. And for the most part, I got to say, I'm really happy. Oh, it's the 4x4 that's throwing it off. I keep getting car-related searches. Let's go over to the Goog. I'm Sapphire 4x4. Let's take out the 4x4 because I'm only getting stuff there, too. Yeah, this is a NVIDIA AMD 4x4-inch x86 computer, $89. Unbelievably hard to beat is what I'm going to say. I should have just went to podnuts.com/category/mini-computer, clicked on Mini PC Show 54. That's really, you know.
Oh, the only wow. Dude, that's insane.
Yeah.
Oh, CNX man. Software.
I'll make sure this is in the notes as well. Sorry.
Yeah, is that a battery backup?
On the Sapphire one?
Yeah. What is that?
I'm not going to say yes.
Dude, this looks insane. I'm looking at the right thing here.
Well, I just put a link inside of our Hangout here for you, too. And didn't want that.
$89 Sapphire BPLX210KL.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Kate. That battery is for the real-time clock.
Yeah.
That's so when you power it off, power it on, date time will stick.
Right, right.
And stay with you. Yeah, I'm a big fan of that form factor. I don't want to say I hate to admit, but the truth is the truth is the truth. It's really difficult for ARM-based boards to beat x86-based boards, and that is an x86 board that, to be honest, mm-hmm. I mean, 4x4-inch, $89. That's what I think. It's an $89 can accept up to 16 gigs of RAM. multiple USB 3 ports. The I did get confirmation. Rich was absolutely right. The power socket on this is basically equivalent to a laptop.
Okay.
So there's really not much difference between this power adapter and a laptop power adapter, which I like because that means I can basically just take old ones and just have them at two different places. You know, have one at work, have one here.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you know, like, you know, 3D print a case for it even and just carry the damn thing around with me. Yeah, this is what I consider a rock star among mini computers. And the sad thing is, Brian, I heavily encourage you not to do this during the show. If you find where the website actually is,
mm-hmm.
Don't start clicking around on it because I know what you'll find out is they got a whole bunch of models like this.
Oh.
So, you know, it is one of those not safe for your bank account type websites.
So take my money, please.
Brain says $89. You got to realize, all right, you got to plug some RAM into that. And of course, you got to want as much as you can get. So you got to plug, is it DDR2 or DDR3? It's 16 gigs.
I believe it was DDR3.
So the actual running price of this, you know, for a running device, is going to be like $30 higher at least because that's what your RAM's going to cost.
Well, I take it. Yeah, I take it almost as like buying a NUC because when a NUC, you don't get a hard drive. There's no hard drive with this. You don't get RAM typically with a NUC unless you buy one completely done. But if you want to save money, you don't. So $89, let's just say you get a good hard drive. That'll be like another $50 to $70 because you don't need a terabyte drive on this thing. And RAM, hypothetically, let's just say expensive RAM, good RAM, high performance RAM, whatever. At the most, I'm going to say, because really all you need is 4 or 8 to get started. I mean, like another $30-$40. So it still comes under like $200-ish. And you have yourself something, my opinion, very respectable, especially for the size of it. And it has built on board 2 HDMI ports.
Yeah.
That's one of the things, you know, like, wow. If it now I say if it had 2 NICs, it would be the trifecta of mini computing.
You know, you can easily put 2 in there with that USB 3.0.
Oh, yeah. And it will work just fine. And here's the thing. 99% of the time when I have a 2 NIC solution, which has only been a couple times in the past, I almost beg them to be of different chipsets just so it's easy in all configurations to obviously, without doubt, identify this is the incoming Ethernet port. This is the outgoing Ethernet port. I almost hate when they're both the exact same chipset because then you're not completely positive which one it's thinking is which. And there were operating systems in the past when they were the same chipset. Sometimes ETH0, this boot, would be one in the next boot, and one would be zero in the next boot. So it would like flip flop, which, you know, that's not good. That's enough to cause little micro tumors.
What if they based that on MAC address?
In the old systems, it used to be not. Now I do believe there is like a UUID, which is essentially like MAC addresses. I don't want to say it is MAC addresses, but it's like MAC addresses. It might be MAC addresses now that I say that, where you can identify hardware like that, which basically can negate all these kinds of issues. The gimmick is, for people who don't know, you just got to then find out, well, how do I get the UUID? What is a UUID? And, you know, kind of thing.
Right.
So it's just a little bit of a learning curve. It isn't super painful, but it definitely takes at least a couple seconds to get over.
So this is for sale right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, you can go right there on the website and I believe click buy now. But I can tell you, me before was like last week, I'm not clicking that right now. I'm not going to click it. So, you know, I didn't want to.
Man, I am drooling all over this board. This just looks so awesome.
Yeah. I know. Well, and here's... two things. One, I hate to put it like this. I really do. But I don't like... NVIDIA or ATI for a lot of things. There's certain things you don't have a choice. You just shut your hole and do it. You know what I mean? You just do it. And with a lot of other form factor things like this, they don't out of the box say they support Linux. Well, with this one, if you buy it, you get in the box a copy of, I want to say it's called Mentor Linux. Mentor Linux is what it looked like, a Ubuntu-based distribution that is more towards the embedded market.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You click buy now and it goes, Sapphire is ready to provide you with easy, fast, and secured way to place a order online directly. You may contact with our sales rep for alternate payment methods. Your contact information, name, email, phone, country, your order. It already has that pre-filled. Other request, and then a CAPTCHA thing. It doesn't say buy it now, ship it today. It just says you can order it now.
Right.
And there is no indication of shipping or anything price. So I'll say, you know, right now, I don't know, but It comes with Linux. Okay, it comes with Linux. It frigging comes with Linux out of the box, which tells me a huge amount of the issues that I've ever experienced on NVIDIA or ATI-based OSs, I'm not going to have. The question is Mentor Linux going to get ongoing, continuous, normal cycle updates, of updates?
Yeah.
Which I'm not going to say is a game changer for me. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I am an administrator of my network. I know what's on my network. I know when stuff's on my network. I log my network. I log my logs on my network. I do all that stuff. Okay. So if something is not completely up to date, it isn't the end of the world, because I know they have to first get through my firewalls or on my network some other way. And every time there's a new device on the network, the first thing it does is not give an IP address, and I have to wait, go in and approve it myself, which really makes the wife mad when she doesn't turn her Chromebook on for like 2 months. But, you know, she'll get over it. I'll say there isn't a whole lot more in the notes. It's really driving me crazy. There is a couple interesting things, though. I really do hate, which link was it? It was this one. 491. I despise these people who are doing nothing more with their life than begging to get clicks, begging to drive traffic, begging to, you know, standing up on stage, pulling their shirt up, screaming, look at me, love me, kind of articles. And this is a perfect example of one. Over at Tech Republic, $25 Raspberry Pi Challenger is faster, runs Android Nougat, and it supports 4K video. Well, first off, congratulations, because you're not the first board to do that. You're not the second board to do that. You're not the third board to do that. You're like the fifth board to do that. Okay, this is not anything new. It's by, of all manufacturers, Le Potato. which I will say they're not new to this either. They've put out more than a couple of devices in the past that have gotten more than a little bit of publicity. But looking at this device, there is absolutely nothing about it that I feel confident about it doing anything spectacular. It's just another board. It doesn't have gigabit Ethernet. It has USB 2.0. The most RAM you can get on it is 2 gigs, to which I say, so what? For $25, it's okay. You know, $20 would be better. Just saying. Because I don't have those other things on there. So it seems to me to be a perfectly competent, middle-of-the-road mini computer. Unless you really like Le Potato. But since I'm diabetic now, I can't eat potatoes.
It's interesting. Some of these specs that I'm looking at, you can find on the Android set-top box devices that are going for $89, $65, you know, between $60 and $90 range. And here they are, they're offering it for $25.
Yeah, and the GPU is a Mali, I believe it's Mali, 450. I believe, could be mistaken, that's literally like a two-year-old GPU. Yeah. I believe this is the GPU that's in everything. So touting the fact that it does 4K video, okay, considering well over 90% of the people out there don't have a 4K monitor, much less a 4K TV, are they pushing it just because they want to put perception in people's minds? Well, it's 4K, so it must be better, right? Because it's a bigger number. I don't know. I wish them all the luck. I hope it does well. I hope it buys it. I don't see myself ever buying this device. I like having more RAM, especially for Android. Let me tell you something. You only got 2 gigs of RAM running Android. You better have a really optimized system.
Yeah.
Or else you're going to suffer and you're going to click and wait. Not a gig Ethernet. Looks like it doesn't have onboard Bluetooth or Wi-Fi. So you're still going to need to put a dongle on it. USB 2.0, you're not going to get a lot of throughput on those as well. So I'm not sure what the use case is for this.
Not sure.
Well, it's a white board, so that's different, right? Wait a minute. Does that make it a racist mini computer? It might be.
Oh, man.
I don't know. Do you have any other topics you want to talk about or links or anything?
Let's look over the list that we got here. So it looks like B-Link is launching something new on line 489. B-Link's a pretty good company when it comes to mini PCs. I know, Dora, you shared this one.
Yeah, I'll say first and foremost, the thing I liked about this link was it is an attractive mini computer. Now, this is the exact same looking form factor we've seen on this show for every bit of, I guess, 7-8 months.
Yeah.
Was it Vivo, I think, was the company?
Yep.
That was putting them out in on Alibaba, AliExpress kind of thing. So it is right now on AliExpress. So it looks like they're taking basically the same case, putting it up. It's a good shade of blue. I think it's a good shade of blue. 217 on AliExpress right now. I believe it's actually, that's for the last version of this box. It is unclear whether the product description of $167 model is accurate. So yeah, this is the kind of thing, anywhere it says it ranges from $155 to $226. For a very slim device. This is smaller than a Mac Mini, right? This is like half height of a Mac Mini. Yeah. So to me, that's a really good form factor on it. Has a Intel Apollo N3450. Trigger warning. N3450. I believe that's another thing that we've said on this show unbelievable numbers of times in the last 6-8 months. So this is a very popular chip. 64 gig internal space, Bluetooth 4.0. USB 3.0, you know, that's all good stuff. Wi-Fi, again, 4K, gigabit NIC, comes pre-installed with Windows on it. To be honest, as long as you have the 4 gigs of RAM, I would expect it would be a fine device for Windows. I'm not going to say it's going to run great or you're going to run any particular powerful Steam games or anything like that, but I think for a normal home theater PC kind of thing, I don't see a reason why this wouldn't work. Or even if it's a computer you slap in your backpack and take back and forth to work, this still looks to me pretty capable.
Yeah, and I'm glad to see when they're offering Windows that they're offering something larger than 32 gigs, because that just, it kind of sets the bar really low with expectations when you start to do the large updates and come to find out, hey, I can't even complete this update without running out of storage.
Yeah, that's the thing. You and I both know when you have 32 gigs of hard drive space, it's like a ticking time bomb. Updates are going to fail sooner or later.
Yeah.
Only question is, how long is it going to take? Yeah. Yeah, I am a fan of that company. They've been around for at least a little while putting out devices. And they've always been fairly prices. I'm not going to say great prices. I'm not going to say they're ripoffs. They're always pretty fairly priced. The other thing I did do, I completely forgot to mention, guys. Line 491. I've said in the past about how I've had countless interactions of pain and suffering whenever I tried to install Node-RED or anything Node.js related. Part of the reason being, on Windows, you have the Windows Store, or you can randomly go download stuff. On Linux, you have repos, or you can go try to download deb files. Mm-hmm. Well, Node, or Node.js, which is the backbone of Node-RED, is completely different. Node has its own cross-platform installer application that acts like a Linux repo tool instead of running like on Debian apt or apt-get. Mm-hmm. On Windows, Mac, Linux, or whatever, you run NPM, the Node Package Manager, and then you do your configurations and installs via that command line interface. And I've had nothing but putridly horrible luck.
Oh, really?
With that. Like 3/4 of the way through, either an install will fail or something I'm referencing just isn't available anymore. Node is a very frequently seemingly changing infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So if your tutorial you're looking at is even a couple weeks old or a couple months old, it's probably already out of date. But I found this link over at DIYprojects.io, which is the website I would have never stumbled across on my own. I believe it was StartPage was the website that brought this one up to me. It is a single line that you basically just copy and paste into your command prompt, which security weenies out there will exclaim, you should never do, and you're an idiot if you do, and I just said do after saying weenies. What it is, it's a single line that's running a bash command, curl command, sorry. It's running a curl command, and then at the very end, it basically runs that downloaded script file. I believe it's a .sh file. So what you can do is you can just run the curl command, download the file, examine it yourself if you want to, and then just run it. It had a nice interface, i.e. a couple lines, said stopping Node-RED, check, moving old versions, check, installing new versions, of course took a little bit of while, check, and then it did cleaning cache, installing Node-RED core, check. And this on the NanoPi Neo, which is one of the original postage stamp size computer with 512 megs of RAM. The whole process took, I'm going to say, about 20-ish minutes. Mm-hmm. And then it was done. Voila. And it was up and running. And here's the kicker. This link was how to install Node-RED on Armbian for the Orange Pi. Okay, this is not an Orange Pi. This is a NanoPi Neo. But my Armbian experience tells me typically Armbian is Armbian, regardless of what hardware you're running it on, for at least my use cases. So I thought, what the hell? I'll give it a try. I ran it, bam, up and running, works like a charm. Even on this little mini weaker computer, it honestly runs fine. I even hooked up a wireless dongle. And again, unlike Raspbian, I can go in through their configurator interface and very easily set up the Wi-Fi and save it out. So every time I reboot, it connects first try every time.
Nice.
I can do everything I need to do. So I started playing around with Node-RED. I'll say it's obvious on everything I want to do on Node-RED, or I'm thinking about doing on Node-RED, I'm going to need a database, because I want to basically run processes in the background doing scraping and catching of items, store them someplace, and then on demand, give me a set of them. The, for instance, is, Like I want to do a episode of DDG. These aren't web pages I want to bookmark. Like with a show, we have a bookmarking system. It goes into a spreadsheet, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I want to tag words, ideas, concepts, kind of thing. So my logic is I can like DM them or publicly tweet them with the right hashtag from my account, have Node-RED capture that word, stick it into a database. I'm getting ready to sit down and do DDG. Then I hit a button. It will go through the database and randomly pull one of those items out and present it to me. I hit record. I start talking. All of the delay type mechanisms I was able to find on Node-RED were time-based mechanisms, which don't count. Because I might tag it at 8 in the morning, I might tag it at 8 at night, and I'm going to want it probably at a different time every day. So there's no preset schedule for any of this, so I can't use that. So I'm going to look at installing probably SQLite or SQLite or however you want to call it, just because I need something extremely light on this hardware, because this hardware is not strong.
Yeah.
So I'm liking Node-RED. I'm liking what I'm seeing with Node-RED. The ease of the interface is absurd, is what I'm going to say. Yes, you got to grok the terms. I hate using that word, Brian. You have to grok the terms for everything in it. If you go on YouTube, there is a metric ton of intro videos on the basics of Node-RED. Almost every example is how to interact with GPIO ports on the Raspberry Pi, because it's a Raspberry Pi. Everyone uses GPIO, and what I want to do is not GPIO related whatsoever.
Right.
So I'm looking at those tutorials. I'm learning some of the fundamentals and basics, but they never completely address my needs. But they address enough to where I think I can comprehend it. So I'm going to try, if I get a chance, install some kind of database, see if I can get that up and running.
So so what are some of the successful things you've done with Node-RED?
Basically, I just have right now a script in place as a test, checking an email account that I don't use, taking the email in, scraping the subject line and the body line, concatenating them into a single text blob, searching to see if a word appears in that text blob. If it does, forward me an email onto a different email account.
And if it doesn't?
And if it doesn't, just fail out and just dump the data.
Can you have it delete the actual email?
Well, you can say, upon reading the email, delete it, mark it unread, archive it. I didn't see a way to selectively delete. I did not see that. But I will say, one of my core beliefs about every piece of software out there is when you have plugin architecture for your software, you afford yourself the opportunity to be successful, because then normal people can scratch their own itch, design their own plugins, and upload them. There is a plugin repo for Node-RED, so you can go download entire strings of functions put together into applications, mm-hmm. like processes, or you can download individual nodes of functionality. So if there isn't something like that out there, it's going to be only a matter of time, or it's the kind of thing, if you really desire it, you could probably put out a contract on it, a bounty on it, and say, look, I'll give somebody $10 if they do this. Mm-hmm. And it wouldn't shock me if a guy from a third world country will think, $10? You know, that's like a steak dinner for me and my family. I'm on this, because that's the reality. You know, we get people from other countries all the time doing low work for us, because they take that money, they can live much better.
That's a fantastic idea, though.
Yeah. I'm going to try to find some more time to play with Node-RED. I'm finding it unbelievably simplistic. The only complexity comes when you have to like drop down and start to write your own code. And it's not that the code is difficult. The code is JavaScript. I'm not efficient at JavaScript. I'm efficient in copying JavaScript and changing a word or two, but I'm not efficient in writing it myself. So it's going to take a little bit more practice. So yeah, that's one of the things I actually did successfully this week.
And what do you have that running on? Do you have that running on a mini PC?
Yeah, it's running on my NanoPi Neo friendly ARM computer.
Okay.
Yeah, runs fine. As soon as it boots up, it does take a couple seconds for it to get started. But once it gets started, it's very snappy, which shocks me.
Sounds like a really good way to clean up your inbox, so you just don't have a lot of junk sitting in it.
Yeah, and I will say I am tempted to use it also as like a Twitter search box. The problem is if you put your Twitter search too broad, you can only get so many results every 15 minutes. And then you'll basically, the feed will just stop because they want you to pay for a access token key that gets more of the streams and feeds. You know, they have to monetize somehow because they sure in the hell ain't doing it any other way.
No. Good stuff.
Very cool. If you, the listener, would like to send in contact information to us, you can either go to podnos.com, click on contact, and then Mini PC Show. I believe the email address is minipcshow@podnos.com. When in doubt, you can just go to the site, send an email. We can confirm that way. Or you can send us an email at a voicemail at 707-6-PODNUT. Brian, if people want to get in contact with you, what's the best way?
To the Podnuts website, or you can hit me up over at G+. I'm always hanging out in Google Plus community, so just give me a ping over there.
Yeah, and my little 2 cents about Google Plus is I get almost ecstatic every time somebody says Google Plus is dead, which almost ironically they say on Google Plus. Every time someone says that, I just reply with, then get off. Because we don't want your kind around here. Get away. I like the herd thinning. Have you ever heard Cliff Clavin from the TV show Cheers?
Oh, yeah.
Mention the Buffalo Theory?
No, I haven't. I know the character, but I haven't heard the theory.
Yeah, Cliff said, you know, somebody commented on how come all you guys who drink beer act like you know everything? And Cliff Clavin said, well, it's the Buffalo Theory. Guy said, what's the Buffalo Theory? Well, the Buffalo Theory goes back, and it's been monitored and watched and documented for hundreds and hundreds of years. The buffalo run in a herd. The herd only ever runs as fast as the slowest buffalo. And whenever they get, you know, whenever a predator comes and goes after the herd, it's inevitable they're always going to get the actual slowest one of the herd. Well, it's good for the herd because then the herd thus runs faster by taking out the slowest buffalo. And this is documented and it's been, you know, proven multiple times over the world, but the exact same thing just so happened also happens with the brain. When you drink beer, the beer goes and it attacks the slowest brain cells, thus speeding your entire brain up in the process. And that's why drunk people appear smarter than not drunk people.
Oh, man. One would say cannabis does the same exact thing.
No comment. This was Cheers back in the 80s. I'm sure another show will do it sooner or later with that as well. I want to thank Rich for coming out. Rich is not at his house. He's on the road, like he said. I think he has a fest flu kind of thing where he's just really not feeling good, feeling like crap. He's been medded up the whole day, and he has more conference to do. I leave tomorrow, so he's going to need to rest and relax. I want to thank you for coming out, Brian. We are going to probably get on the show one of the guys who we originally intended to be on episode 1.
Yes.
I believe, Brian.
Yes.
And I do believe he's been on the show, but I want to say it's been about 20 shows ago. I believe.
Gosh.
Maybe?
Good memory. No, I couldn't come. No? Might be right.
Okay. I don't know. Brain, not. I'm delusional. So we might have another host come on the network, which I will say this is a family friendly, user generated podcast network. We're not journalists pretending to be podcasters. We're not Hollywood celebrities pretending to be podcasters. We're not YouTube wannabes pretending to be podcasters. We're podcasters who are real people who happen to find time to podcast. So Rich will once in a while bail out. Brian once in a while has to work overtime. Once in a while I can't make it. So the more people we can have on this show, the better. So I really do hope that Daniel can come out and become a regular, because I'm sure he'll have nothing but good stuff to bring to the show. And the only way you, the listener, are going to find out about that is if you go to podnos.com, click on subscribe, and you get every show when it's available. I want to thank everyone for downloading. Thanks everyone for their support, and we will talk to everyone in about a week.
Salud.
Hi, this is Matt from the MRP Tech Podcast. I would like to invite you all to take a listen to my show, the MRP Tech Podcast, on the Podnuts Network. The theme for my show is everyday tech for everyday people. We talk about Windows, Mac, Linux, iOS, Android, Chrome OS, and anything else technology related. You can find us on iTunes, and you can find us by searching in any podcatcher. We hope you take a listen and let us know what you think.